within the current zoning envelope and one that includes a high degree of articulation setbacks that are respectful of immediate neighbors and sufficient below grade parking, family sized units, as we talked about affordable units as well. Today we are seeking your approval and we appreciate your hearing us.
Thank you. Mr. Ramos, go ahead.
Members of the council, Tim Ramos for your record. My address is 1225 Southwest Hessler in Portland. Mark O'Donnell and I have owned this property for a long time, 35 years, and it's our hope that our families will be involved in the stewardship of the property long into the future. We are long-term owners. We are long-term neighbors. Mark grew up in the neighborhood. My wife grew up in the neighborhood and was adamant we would raise a family there, which we did. As you can imagine, it was not our plan to be involved in a serious conversation that divides our neighbors on a question like this. On our block, we have one person who's clearly opposed to our request. When you cross the street, we have people both opposed and supportive of redevelopment, and you will see that in the letters you received in the testimony. This is not comfortable because these people have been our partners in addressing a lot of tough issues, like dealing with commuter parking on our streets and pioneering the use of shared parking and getting that language embedded in the comprehensive plan. So this application is not one that we undertook lightly. We did it because we found that the alternative that we had been looking at didn't work financially. As Commissioner Fritz has mentioned, the idea of preserving the building and having development around it, that's where we started. We've been through three different development teams now and said, can you make that work? And three times been told that that's really not in the cards for this building. And that's why we authorized Girding Edlin to undertake the city's process for reviewing redevelopment proposals. And that's a two-step process. Step one is this one. If we get through it, the result is not a demolition permit. The result is simply the opportunity to then go through a design review process to see whether a design can be derived that truly implements the policies of the city and the things that we're talking about here. If it passes muster, then it can proceed. If it doesn't, it will be not denied and the building will remain. That's the process. As owners, we support the efforts of the team that Girding Edlin has put together. Holst and Heritage, a great team, and so we support their effort and ask that you allow them to go through the process. And finally, I would commend your attention to the letter of Al Solheim, which will be submitted today, who succinctly says why, on balance, the City Council should allow this team to make the effort to propose something more contributing to the city's values than what exists there now. Thank you.
Thank you. Tess?
Mr. Mayor, council members, my name is John Tess, Heritage Investment Corporation, 1120 North West Northrop. As you all know, I've been involved in historic preservation for my entire career, and we do work all, you know, throughout the country. Some people have said that, you know, the best preservation is no development because the buildings, they stay there. As we try to grow our city and we try to bring more and more people in and have higher density, I think that we have the protections with our historic districts there, but we do have this issue of infill projects and how do we provide infill within those historic districts that sometimes have gaps or sometimes have properties that are in there that are not that could be put to a better, higher and better use. I think you find this, you know, if you look at the Yamhill Historic District, you see the rehabilitation of the market there that just recently happened, much better for the city the way it looks now than it did before. Look at Skidmore Old Town. There have been some incredible projects that have happened there and are beginning to happen there. And I sat with Bill Nadeau a long time, and, you know, had he not passed away, we would have seen, you know, that area change, you know, relatively quickly. You see it in the 13th Avenue Historic District gave rise to the rest of, you know, the Pearl District and what's going on there. You go across the river, you look at the Grand Avenue Historic District, which people questioned with that. Well, should it be a historic district? The Landmarks Commission even questioned whether it should. But that side of town is, you know, is developing also. This question of infill is a very, very, very important issue. I think in the case of this project, you have like the A-team, you know, in terms of Mark Edlin. I mean, he's proven nationally. He did the first platinum lead project in the country. he took, you know, the Armory building and kept this building that everyone thought, you know, no one could use, keeps it in the middle of, you know, many high rises. I think that, you know, if you're going to have something done and done right and set a precedent for other projects that are going to happen in the future, this is the opportunity. And I would assure you that, you know, in terms of the resource that is being talked about here, demolition of that resource is not going to hurt the city. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Thank you all.
Thank you.
So let's hear from additional folks who've signed up in support of the application.
Okay. We have about 11 more people signed up. The first three, please, coming up are Jim, I believe the last name is Montaigne, and Alan Costley, and John Chandler.
Okay. And if we have you signed up the wrong way, either way, if you signed up in support by mistake or in opposition by mistake, then just let Carla know and we'll get you at the right group.
But we are taking all of the supporters first.
Yes, supporters first and then opponents.
Let's go ahead and go with, I'm sorry. Jill Sherman, I believe is the last name.
Yep, she's here. Okay, please proceed. Welcome.
Hey. Good afternoon. My name is Jim Pasteen. I own and live in a single-family residence on the 1700 block of Northwest Hoyt Street. In other words, I live with this building. I speak today in support of the demolition of the subject building and in opposition to the Landmark Commission's recommendation to the council. Like most informed buyers, when my wife and I bought one of the historic Trenkman high-style Queen of Hannah homes, as the Landmark Commission's letter calls them, we knew full well that we were buying and then renovating an historic single-family home in an area zoned RH. We fully expect to see development in the area and even on our block. We are neither surprised by nor afraid of it. Indeed, based on the continued and projected need for housing in Portland, we actually fully expect and expected apartments to be built in this zone, not something else. As I walk around the Northwest District, and we moved here in 2006 from Texas with three cars, and we're down to one and we barely use it, so we're living the Portland lifestyle. But when I walk around the district, I see juxtaposed combinations of single-family homes and very pleasantly presented multifamily residences, and I do not find the combination objectionable. That's what RH means to me. This owner has done a respectful job of taking into account the concerns of local homeowners, and I'm one of the folks that has continued in dialogue with the owner and developer about such factors as parking impacts, traffic flow, street facing, and sun shadows. It's not so clear to me that the next proposal from the next owner, or this one, if demolition is denied, will be so accommodating. The building has now been vacant for 7 years, as you've heard. Others have testified to its poor condition and lack of marketability. In addition, despite the owner's diligent maintenance and security patrols, and I commend them for it, empty buildings in the Northwest, as you all know, like this, always attract the homeless, who in this case sleep and eat in the subgrade stairwell on our block. Because of the owner's diligence, the situation here is not nearly as bad as other parts of the Northwest, such as the Northwest Community Garden or the Johnson Street 405 underpass. However, I am concerned about what conditions we neighbors on Hoyt Street will be left with if the public opposition to demolition sways you and you deny the owners what I consider to be reasonable and collaborative plan for that property. Finally, many opponents of the demolition of this building seem to believe that its continued presence will serve as some kind of tribute to its history. I heard a lot of discussion about that just now. Insisting that this building remain in order to honor its history is a little like insisting we honor our forebears by keeping their bodies strewn about. History isn't honored, in my opinion, by this building in its current condition, vacant or otherwise. If you wish to honor its history, make the owner put up a historical marker. We talked about panels as a condition of development. There are many about town, including one only about four blocks away. Then, instead of simply seeing a vacant building that no one wants, passersby will learn a little history. And that's not a bad thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Okay.
Mayor Hayes, City Commissioners, my name is Alan Costley. I'm a 20-year resident at 1711 Northwest Hoyt Street, which is on the same block, two doors east of the subject building. I appreciate the unique pedestrian experience of walking my block and the historic neighborhood with many Victorian homes, historic buildings, and apartment buildings. I approve of historic preservation as a stated goal in the comprehensive plan. and I appreciate those who have worked to preserve historic property and to create the Alphabet District. Unfortunately, the building at 1727 is neither aesthetically distinctive nor historically compelling. All buildings have a prior story. Neither the story nor the architecture of this existing building contributes to the neighborhood history or culture to a degree that merits preservation. Demolition of this one contributing building will not render the tradition of historic preservation in Northwest moot. 1727 Northwest Hoyt has been unoccupied for 4 to 5 years. The property is economically underutilized. The entrance area and parking lot have attracted less desirable behavior and activities. If no demolition is allowed of the existing building, the unattractive and underutilized status quo continues. Or no demolition may result in development that is even more unappealing to the neighborhood. The brick building for which demolition has been requested is an unreinforced masonry building with high seismic upgrade costs. A repurposing or new development that included the existing building could surround, cover, and block the current building, but I think it would be very difficult to integrate the existing building into a coherent design. Keeping the existing structure would probably preclude excavation for much-needed underground off-street parking in a neighborhood where parking on and off-street is in very short supply. I do not want to see development with uninspiring architecture, diminished utility, and little or no off-street parking. That would not maximize value to the city or to the neighborhood. I would prefer that the City Council approve demolition and set the bar high for the resulting development opportunity, including a high-quality project with design and materials chosen for enduring value, minimal traffic impact on neighborhood streets, maximum off-street parking with entrance and exit on 18th Street, streetscape designed to enhance the pedestrian experience, development that maintains existing trees or increases the foliage canopy, and energy efficiency in construction process materials and design. I've also submitted letters to the Landmarks Commission and to the council members in support of demolition that I hope you will read.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. I am going to use maybe even less than my 3 minutes just to read from a few of the letters from folks who are not able to be here today.
Okay. Just put your own name in the record, Jill.
Jill Sherman. Thank you. One is Doug Macy. He's also a neighbor, lives on Northwest Irving across from the site, and a landscape architect and urban designer here in town. And just reading from his letter, he says, as a longtime resident, he's familiar with the neighborhood. It's a tired structure that has experienced considerable change over the years and today contributes little to the streetscape or neighborhood character. And then in my mind, it would be much preferred that the building be demolished and a new apartment building be allowed on the half-block site. There's a future design review process, so I'm comfortable that the building will not be demolished without a suitable new structure. Also from another property owner on the site, Gordon Harris, who owns a one-story warehouse and surface parking lot and has done a significant number of other small renovations in the neighborhood. He says the 1727 building's age, design, low ceilings, seismic, and other necessary upgrades make renovation economically unfeasible. The building's been vacant for at least 6 years and will continue to be vacant due to its obsolescence and end of its economic cycle. And the proposed apartment house with underground parking will help stabilize the immediate area, stabilize property values, and replace two surface parking lots. And finally, from Ted Miller, who is a nearby neighbor who lives in a historic home adjacent to the new Park 19 project, who says that construction of Park 19 had no adverse impact on the historic value of his property or the neighborhood, and he believes that replacing the existing vacant building with residential units would enhance neighborhood safety and vibrancy, and again, of course, the parking, that offering underground parking, unlike recent projects in the neighborhood, would be a positive impact of getting parked cars off the streets. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks very much. All right, next three, please.
Sorry.
The next three are Jeff Sturr, DJ Guild, I believe his last name, and Jerry Johnson.
Good
Go ahead, Mr. Sturr, while others are coming up.
Certainly. Thank you very much. My name is Jeff Sturr. I'm founding partner with Holst Architecture in Portland, Oregon. We're a firm renowned for our innovative housing and sustainable infill development. We've also had extensive experience with historic renovation and repurposing existing old buildings. You may know EcoTrust, PNCA, Center for Architecture, the Northwest Library on Northwest Thurman Street, and the Hotel Madera, just to name a few. It goes to say I'm passionate about the built environment in Portland. I had the privilege to serve the city on numerous design panels and advisory groups, and also was the chair of the Portland Design Commission. Today, I am speaking in support of demolition and a thoughtful redevelopment of the full half-block site. I'm a strong proponent for the well-designed urban infill. This is vital if we're going to continue to meet the city's comprehensive planning goals and accommodating our inevitable growth while still maintaining our region's livability. They're directly tied together. I strongly endorse the city's current efforts to combat sprawl. I support 20-minute neighborhoods, and I really support further reduction on our over-reliance on automobile trips, and this building will do that. I have and remain a strong advocate for restoring buildings where practical and supporting responsible redevelopment otherwise. Portland is unique because of its commitment to this type of smart and sustainable growth. Also in supporting a diverse architectural history throughout the city and in honoring strong civic engagement, something we'll pledge to. It's also why the city is always at the top of national lists in attracting highly educated, highly skilled, creative people to the region. Work on a project on the other 405, which is creative services coming in from the Bay Area. I suspect some of them might be living in a building like this or nearby in the neighborhood. So in this sense, the Historic Alphabet District is perhaps our region's premier example of just this kind of development. There is already a robust 100-year history of dense multifamily housing and single-family houses coexisting together, with both located near vibrant commercial and employment zones and each readily accessible to multimodal transportation. It's a great area. We'll continue to reach out to adjacent neighbors. We've worked with many already. I believe in the design process. I wish this one can go ahead. We'll work carefully with those neighbors. First, by following the desired characteristics and condition statements that you'll find in the district plan. And also, I think we can find unique solutions in this specific location, such as continuing shallow landscape setbacks at the front of the building, divided front facades, bringing the massing down, implementing perhaps townhouse development on the ground floors that address the street on all sides of the building, providing the parking below grade to address needs for parking. So in closing, I pledge to work closely with neighbors, with the city, and with the broader community to find another exceptional design solution to an issue that's critical to all of us. And today, I would ask that you allow this process to proceed and let design, great design, and a strong community engagement carry the day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mayor, I have a question. Please. The Historic Landmarks Commission, which would be the review body to look at that design,
absolutely,
has already said that they're not likely to support a 4 to 6 story apartment building. So you seems like are you assuming that it would then come to council and we would approve a 4 to 6 story apartment building?
That certainly may be one outcome of the process at this point. I propose that we honor the process as it stands in this case. We will be back in front of Landmarks after having an extensive design process with neighbors in that situation. The zone allows 75 feet, certainly, and it allows a 4-to-1 massing in the RH zone. So we're going to have to negotiate what the end result with that is. But the two handouts I gave you today both graphically show you where we have taller buildings, 4-to-6 apartment, 4-to-6-story apartment buildings, next to single-family homes. This isn't rare in that district. It's not even unique. There's quite a number. The second handout I gave you is a vicinity map that does show buildings 4 to 6 stories tall in the immediate 2-block radius of this building. So I think there's a lot of discussion. We'll certainly engage the Landmarks Commission as we go through this. They recently have approved 5-story buildings just a block away. So it's a negotiated thing, and that's part of the Portland process, and this team is well equipped to kind of take that conversation forward. The final sheet I gave you are just some
photographs of pictures kind of in the three-block radius, I'd say, of these relationships, but it's not uncommon.
Thank you. Okay, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hills, City Commissioners. My name is David J. Guild. I'm a managing member of Rimfire Investments, 6D LLC, and David J. Guild Investment Properties. We're in the commercial real estate business. We primarily buy empty buildings, reposition them in the market through renovation, and aggressive vetting of finding tenants for those repositioned buildings. We have Class A, B, and C office buildings in the city of Portland and have for several years. I've looked at 1727 Northwest Hoyt, and after looking over Northwest Hoyt, from my perspective and based on my experience, I cannot figure out how to make that particular building economically feasible to renovate and lease up. A couple barriers are the floor plates or floor plans of the building, load-bearing walls, low slung ceilings are just not what the market is looking for, along with the economic cost of doing such renovations. What would happen is it's a Class C building, and you could spend all that money trying to make a mule into a thoroughbred. It's just not going to happen. And you'd still end up with a Class C building at the end of the day. And through that, you'd end up with Class C tenants. You know, some examples of Class C tenants are methadone clinics, marijuana dispensaries, call centers, and whatnot. So to sum this up, Gordon Harris had a letter that kind of summarized, but at this point, I would recommend demoing and putting something new in its place. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, welcome.
Hi, my name is Jerry Johnson with Johnson Economics. We're at 621 Southwest Alder, Suite 605 in Portland. I'm not actually on the team here. I'm actually just talking because this is something I take a great interest in. We've spent a lot of time working on public policy issues related to infill and redevelopment and difficulties in that. And I recognize the city has a lot of broad noble goals, often they're going to conflict. And increasingly, since we've taken a position now in this region, that we're going to meet a lot of our new need or growth needs through development or infill, we're going to see more of these conflicts. And this particular site is one that I think is going to be, while it's not a precedent-setting site for legal, I guess, it's something to keep an eye on since we're just to the point where the city's taken a position that they're adopting consistent with their goals, a commitment to high-density compact development. And this is one of the first ones we're seeing come forward since the urban growth report's been adopted. A lot of key benefits, I think everyone talks about them all the time. I think we do understand these, more efficient utilization of infrastructure investments. I think that's particularly important here. You've got your complete neighborhood's goal, a very high amenity base in this area. Reduction in vehicle miles traveled. This project's actually going to be parking itself, which I think is a positive. But at the same time, hopefully creating a development that doesn't require as much parking because it's in an area that you can do a lot of things without driving. It also helps us keep pressure off the urban growth boundary and retention of natural spaces, farm, forest land, and reduction in carbon emissions, I think things that have been talked about in other policy parts of the city. I do think this is a particular case that really taking advantage of the high amenity base, that you really get a lot more bang for your buck and that you'll get a better yield out of this particular trade-off. Economics is full of trade-offs, but in this particular market, you'll actually get a very high-quality development in exchange for this particular trade-off. And the trade-off is it's one building, but you've also got multiple surface parking lots so you're trading out as well. And I do think we should talk about the scale of this as well because the solution, if we can't develop this building, is redevelop the parking lots or smaller scale developments and leave this particular structure in place. I think the development outcome you're going to get is a little bit different than what's being proposed. Lower quality development, probably more of a wood frame, zero park type solution that's going to fit into that particular modules that would be remaining. So taking a look at this, it's a trade-off. I think you can have a lot of these coming forward, and I do think it's a trade-off you should consider and take a look at, you know, weighing the relative benefits and impacts on your competing goals in this particular case, and it's one that I would support.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you all.
Thank you.
Next three.
are Dave Audi, Lightning, and John, I believe the last name is Munt.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Dave Audi. I live at 1314 Northwest Irving, four blocks from this building. I also work at Holst Architecture, and I'm working on designing the proposed building. I'd also like to note that when I first moved to Portland 17 years ago, I lived in the Alphabet District, and my daughter also goes to school four blocks from the site. So needless to say, this neighborhood means quite a bit to me. I just wanted to add on to a few things that my colleague Jeff Stewart pointed out, that we started this project first by reaching out to neighbors. That was the first step we did before we did anything. And our initial proposals are a result of those meetings. We took those meetings very seriously, and it helped shape what our proposal is. New development on this site can and should enhance a sense of place and identity. We can accomplish these goals first by following the stated desired characteristics and tradition statements from the Northwest District Plan. And the Northwest District Plan has a distinct section for the eastern area of that plan. There are five things that we're doing that are going to enhance that plan. One, we're going to contribute to the architectural diversity of the eastern edge, which is noted as one of the characteristics of that area, is a diversity of types of buildings. Two, by continuing the partial block building massing. Three, by eliminating surface parking and addressing parking needs. Four, by developing an identifiable corridor, especially down 18th Avenue. Five, by designing a building to help buffer the Knob Hill neighborhood from I-405. So in conclusion, I just wanted to say that I hope you'll allow us the chance to design this building and make design review a part of the process, and that hopefully on balance we can provide a building that is more sustainable, provides more density, and provides a better human experience in this neighborhood that means so much to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Humanitarian PDX. A very difficult situation here. I mean, I was born at Good Samaritan Hospital, so actually lived in Northwest Portland over 10 years, owned some properties near there. Have a great understanding of what you have here. You have a building that is kind of a single-use building, and I respect the historic value in honoring some of the people in the building. But there is a time in the neighborhood that sometimes these buildings do need to be replaced. And we've had some expert owners, developers up here with many years of experience have gone over why they're going in this direction. And they have also stated they've owned this building 30 years plus. And I can assure you as an owner that when you own a property that long, you have that emotional attachment to it also. But they also understand that there has to be an economic way to make it work. And the building's been sitting empty. They've presented an outstanding plan on what to do with this property, the highest and best use. And we can look at this and debate on the benefits. The benefits are that it's a nice place to live in Northwest Portland. What the Singer family did on 23rd, what various other developers have done in that area, attracts a lot of people because of the way they came in and developed those areas out. They're providing a tremendous amount of units here. They've taken the time to have off-street parking. They've worked with the neighbors. They've done a tremendous amount here. They have large square footage units here. I think the design, as been suggested, can be possibly refined. That's just my own opinion. But again, like I say, I think what they've overall presented here is really a benefit to the community. They've talked about looking at more affordable units, looking at possible other suggestions to be able to do that through subsidies. I think they're putting everything out on the table here, and it's very clear that I think the highest and best use is the direction they presented. It's going to be a good quality project, and the true benefit is to allow more people who want to live in this area to be able to do that. And that's a very important situation in Northwest Portland, as we all know, because a lot of the buildings that you look in some of these brochures, like the Dayton or Mond or the American Apartments, this building just doesn't have that type of character. It really doesn't have that type of character. that we're talking about on some of the buildings in Northwest Portland. And again, I do agree honoring the potential owners that used to own this property with maybe the historical marker. And the highest and best use is what's been presented as an apartment building. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else that wants to speak in support of the application?
I show Megan Murphy, and if anybody else signed up on that list and didn't hear their name, please come on up.
Okay, your views have been presented. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, then we'll switch to opposition. I think we have a sign-up sheet, but we also have the Neighborhood Association. So do we want to give the Northwest District Association the opportunity to go first? Oh, sorry, do you have one more supporter? Come on up, please. Good afternoon.
My name is John Chandler, and I am the president of the board of directors of William Temple House and the interim executive director at this time. So I'm very familiar with ancient buildings and have a great sensitivity for them because we operate out of a money pit. This building that we have, which is a beautiful icon, but this building, and I've reviewed the application and all of the information that the owners have provided, and it is structurally has no integrity, and it really doesn't do anything to enhance the historical value of its location. So, and I also think that they've provided really well thought out plans for off-street parking and the Portland bicycle component as well, and I think it's a good thing to increase the population and for our new middle class. It's going to be living in apartments. That's it.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, so let's turn to opposition and call on the NWDA, please. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and City Councilors. My name is Daniel Cairns. I'm a lawyer. I represent the Northwest District Association. I have two procedural requests. If I could ask the there are several members of the Landmarks Commission that are here that took time off from to come here. If you could allow them to testify ahead of me, and then when it does come time for me to testify, could I have 5 minutes as a Neighborhood Association rep?
My answers would be yes and yes, and I didn't realize we had Landmarks Commission members present. So, yes, let's call on them first, and then we'll take your presentation. Thanks for that suggestion.
I would say at least 5 minutes on account of how long we gave the proponent supporters. Exactly.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your amazing volunteer service.
Thank you, Commissioners and Mr. Mayor, and thanks for letting us come and talk with you. So first, we want to just be here for our
name and record.
Oh, sorry, Brian Emmerich, the chair of the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission, and we have...
I'm Jessica Ingeman, the vice chair.
Thanks. First, we wanted to be here as a resource if you had questions for us on our position or letter. So, and then second, we had some points to make after we've heard some testimony that might be helpful for you guys. So,
great.
Do you want me to go through those points first?
Sure, please.
Okay. So some of the things that we've heard discussed from the applicant and some of the testimony were, you know, first, this is in a precedent-setting case, and I guess we've talked about this a lot among the commission, and every time it's discussed by anybody, the first thing that comes up is the Blanchet House. It's the only one that's actually been approved since 2004 in this process, so we would argue it is precedent-setting, and that's why it's relevant in the discussion, and that this would be relevant going forward. So we are concerned first and foremost about the precedent of removing essentially a contributing historic building from the historic district to allow for a larger scale development, just as a process piece, I guess. So,
is it your position within this district then that there is no circumstance under which we could grant that relief?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say it's a case by case, and that just as the criteria of the code points out, it's got to be on balance a win for the neighborhood or a win for the historic district.
And that's the course that the city council charted in terms of this process. So if it's a case-by-case basis and it turns on a balancing of clearly enunciated factors, why do you believe that is a precedent that – why do you believe that that is a precedent, first of all, and why would that precedent prevent us from, in this case, coming to our own independent conclusion?
Well, I think it's a precedent because it's never been proposed in the Alphabet Historic District, so this is the first time we're hearing this. I think it's a precedent in that in this case versus the other one that we have on the records, which is the Blanchet House, we're talking about essentially allowing for a larger scale private development as the benefit for the neighborhood versus in the Blanchet House, we had a clear social service benefit for the neighborhood. So, and
my recollection was that the Landmark Commission disagreed with the council on the Blanchet House, though. And there was a concern that we were setting a precedent on the notion of demolition by neglect.
I think that on the Blanchet House, our approach and review was with the criteria of our charge of protecting the historic resources, and that we understood council's position and that you were in the position to be able to make that broader determination based on overall benefits conveyed to the neighborhood in terms of social services and other things that don't come in our purview. So I don't think in that respect we disagreed with where your perspective was from the council, but from our narrower viewpoint of protecting the resources, that was where our recommendation came from in that case. So also there's been some discussion. First, I want to say, too, that Landmarks Commission is not anti-development. So what we would like to see on this site would be at least first and foremost proposed, rather than a half block development, is 3/8 of a block of infill development with 1/8 of a block of adaptive reuse or restoration or some other feature that saves the building so that the history is preserved on the site. So it's not an either or proposition in our mind. I think we see development as a huge asset for the neighborhood and that a lot of those comp plan goals could be met with 3/8 of a block of development with 1/8 of a block of redevelopment that protects the historic resource. And then there's been some discussion about the zoning envelope and what the rules allow as far as the 75 feet and that kind of thing. And just to be clear, we have a lot of proposals that come to the Landmarks Commission, and they are case by case as well. So the zoning isn't an outright, you get 75 feet. It's contextually based on what's adjacent, what are the resources, and what's contextually appropriate. So that's where we have some initial concerns about what we've seen with the six-story development and the scale of that relative to what's adjacent to it. And I think that hearing the applicant talking about if the affordable housing doesn't pan out, it may not work for the pro forma. Well, I would also ask if they can't get 82 units proposed, does the pro forma work? Because it's setting up a challenging review process for the Landmarks Commission, I think, going forward, if that's the case.
Well, could you elaborate on that last point?
Well, I think, you know, we haven't had the design. This process is a little bit odd because they're required to show something, you know, essentially to come forward. And what we've seen is essentially a 4-to-6-story development proposal, but not a lot of details yet. So that would be worked out in the next step, of course. But just from an intuitive sense, I think pretty much everyone on the Landmarks Commission was concerned about the scale of that relative to the single family homes that are adjacent to this property. And I can't remember the number, but there was a huge amount of historic properties that were immediately adjacent to the site. And, you know, the precedents that we've talked about in the past of the 5-story ones we approved on 19th Avenue, those were in much larger scale contexts. The one at 19th and Johnson and the one at the end of Cooch Park were both in large-scale kind of contexts, and that's partly why we felt those were approvable in those applications.
Do you raise those issues, though, because you believe there's no scenario under which you could come to agreement with the applicant on an appropriate size building and design if we were to grant the demolition and it comes back to you for the design review component?
No, I certainly wouldn't want to preempt that process. I think that process needs to happen if this goes forward, and we would be productive members of that conversation just like we were with the Blanchet House, and we approved ultimately a 4-story infill project afterwards there. I bring that forward, though, now just in full disclosure because we had that conversation with the applicant at the table because it was relevant. It was required to be presented as part of this process.
One of the things, I mean, we have a little sketch in our 2-foot-thick packet of materials of right. What it could look like. But I also recall earlier one of the architects said that in consultation with the neighborhood, there might be a consideration about a kind of a townhouse-type design that's more in scale to the streetscape and that has a design component. And I didn't see that as part of the sketch, and it just occurred to me that that's exactly the kind of iterative process or collaborative process that could happen. Mm-hmm. Where with feedback from the community and from you, you get a better design.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's true. And I think, you know, the first thing we'd like to see, though, is a proposal that works on the 3/8 of a block for infill development, which may be along that smaller scale line, and maintains the historic resource. If that's not achievable, then that would be the kind of discussion I think we'd be looking toward, though, because just because the, I guess the main point is just because there's 75 feet in the zoning code, that's not a written law that you get to build to 75 feet in this case. It's subjective. So,
just back up for a minute and talk about the context and the value of contributing structures rather than designated structures.
Sure.
How do contributing structures fit in with a historic district?
I think Jessica's probably the
best
one to answer.
Maybe I'll take that one. So there is a difference between individually listed National Register buildings and contributing buildings. In this case, the resource is sort of the larger district, and there are many different buildings. Some of them are beautiful high-style buildings, and some of them are very ordinary historic buildings that all come together to tell this larger story. I think 487 buildings, of which there's just a tiny bit of history written for each one in the National Register nomination. And we really look at this, you know, collectively as a family, and that each building is a really important contributor. And it's you probably heard the phrase of death by a thousand cuts, that we become really concerned when we start to pick off these buildings where we claim that, oh, they're not that beautiful looking. Well, this isn't the National Register of Beautiful Places. It's historic places. And sometimes historic places don't have a lot of gingerbread and beautiful architectural detail, although this one certainly has much that could be easily brought back. So I don't know if that gets to your question, contributing buildings.
I found your letter really helpful at the top of page 2, talking about many contributing commercial buildings in this district that help shape the context and scale of the district rather than standing out as architectural masterpieces. And so that was very helpful to me to understand that, indeed, it was probably considered for historic designation in and of itself, and it was the Parks District, the National Parks District, who decides which ones in and of themselves and which ones are contributing and which ones are in the district but not contributing at all, right?
It's a very lengthy, well-vetted process with multiple layers and historians that are involved. So certainly the contributing and non-contributing is not a sort of an indiscriminate designation that's put on these buildings.
And can you talk to us about the balancing of the comprehensive plan policies? Because those are the approval criteria. And so you will. And what I've heard from the applicant is that merely the provision of housing and the reasons that we have housing in the city is the public benefit.
Sure. Brian, I can take some of that, and then maybe you can jump in. But I think that, as Hillary laid out in her presentation, we have multiple policies and goals that are also around historic preservation and urban design. And certainly, as the commission discussed, I believe that there are ways to achieve both housing goals and historic preservation goals on the site. It may not be as lucrative for the applicant, but I think there's a way to achieve more by not allowing the demolition.
Can I get you to return, just go back just a second to the issue of the building? So, as I understand your position here, the applicant didn't apply under criterion 1, that there's no reasonable economic use remaining.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Applied under criteria 2, which is this balancing equation. And you're view is that the 3/8 of the site that consist of the other non-contributing building or buildings and parking lots are available for redevelopment.
Right.
And so therefore there is on the site economic use that's at least potentially there.
Right. Right?
But okay, I understand why you didn't apply under criterion 1. But what's, given that this is a non-conforming former office building in a high-density apartment zone, what's the likely economic use of this building in whatever scenario that you're considering might be feasible downstream?
Sure. So I can have a few points to say to that. First, we have a zoning code incentive that through a Type 3 historic preservation incentive review properties, contributing properties in RH zones can actually have more flexible uses, so they would be able to use this building for commercial office use again going through that process. So they are not restricted to doing an adaptive reuse that converts this to housing.
So you would anticipate that this building would get remodeled as office space?
Yes, that would be the lowest cost way to move forward.
Really, that would be up to the applicant, though.
But then the building is viewed from both 18th Avenue and Hoyt Street across a parking lot that you're saying should be replaced by a building. So it would only be viewed from one remaining side, right?
Well, depending on, I guess, again, that starts getting into theoretical development, you know, of what they might propose. But since they control the other properties, they may be able to step off and create a light well or other things with the adjacent properties.
Okay. But, I mean, it's a parking lot now.
Correct,
It's the lowest and worst use, to use the contrary of the phrase we've heard here this afternoon. Whether you're looking at it from an urban design or a historic standpoint, it's the lowest and worst use. You're saying a building should grow on that
site. We would like
site.
To see that, sure.
It's RH, so it's unlikely to be one story.
Right.
So I'm having a hard time. I'm not an architect, but I'm having a hard time imagining a scenario by which the aesthetic value of the southern face of this building is accessible to anyone after redevelopment?
The southern face really has no historic character. It's a secondary elevation. So I think covering the southern face would be absolutely not a problem for the Landmarks
Commission. It's essentially a party wall, they form on the southern face.
It's now occupied by windows and doors, but...
Well, the applicant added the big arched entry off of the parking lot, which is one of the things they argue is non-contributing now with the building. But, but that was added basically because the building was torn down that was adjacent, and they had a parking lot, and they wanted to access the entry more directly off the parking lot. But I don't think aesthetically, from a historic standpoint, covering the south facade is an issue for Landmarks. It was historically a party wall.
Okay. Thank you. That helps.
And I think, you know, the building, they've kind of argued that it's economically not viable even as office, but I would argue that the applicant had their legal offices there for over a quarter of a century. And, you know, the building's, it's time for some reinvestment. When we questioned the applicant, they were the ones that apparently had removed the old windows in there, the entry canopy. And granted, it was not a historic contributing building at that time, but we're just talking about the history of how the resource got to where it is now. And looking at it as an architect who works on a lot of preservation and adaptive reuse, and I know Jessica shares this view as well, the building isn't that hard to turn it back to what it was. I mean, most people that would be buying this from a private development standpoint would be looking at window replacement and some restoration of the features. The key envelope and the brick and hasn't really been modified other than the addition of the entry off of the south parking lot. So,
okay, one more question along these practical lines, because, again, we're trying to balance. And we don't have a design application in front of us, but we obviously will if this is approved. Is it practicable to put underground parking on an eighth block site?
Probably not. On a quarter block, possibly. So that would be something that would need to be balanced as, you know, what would be the parking goals there. And I think commensurately, though, is it practical to get 82 units approved there, which would create the demand for underground parking versus potentially on balance a little bit less units and preservation goals maintained and then less traffic demand essentially. So,
if I could follow up on that, Mayor, if we were to allow the demolition, are there any conditions that you would urge us to consider that address your concerns about precedent?
That's a good question. I think that the process allows for it to come back through the Landmarks Commission. I guess one of our concerns would be, and we heard a little bit of that banter back and forth, is that essentially the Landmarks Commission would be just a quick stop to try to get back here to council, and you guys would actually be doing the design review because they would be concerned that they're not going to be able to get, say, the six stories through, and that's what the pro forma demands. And so essentially it would be kind of a runaround to get back to an approvable design at the end of the day that essentially just comes back to City Council. And on the precedent side, I guess the big concern really is that, you know, this may not be a rock star of a building, but there's a lot of areas in our historic districts that maybe have onesies or twosies on the block that, you know, I understand from a development standpoint it makes a lot of sense maybe to pull that one building out and do a half block versus do smaller, more sensitive infill development. But that's going to be at the degradation of the neighborhood in most cases, I believe. So that's really the precedent we're concerned about.
All right. Are there questions for our commission members or anything else that you wanted to raise? Appreciate you being here, and thank you again for all the time you spend on these issues for us.
Thank you so much. Look forward to the dialogue.
Okay.
Carla, how do I queue up my PowerPoint? We have a PowerPoint presentation that several people will be
using. She'll help you with our arcane AV system.
This is the computer age, and I see it's on a computer.
Yeah. That's a good question. That's a good one.
Amanda?
Yeah. And they see this on their screen.
Yeah, she'll switch it over so we can see it here.
You mind if I ask? Do we have it?
So okay. For the record, again, my name is Daniel Cairns. I'm an attorney. I represent the Northwest District Association and also Jessica Richmond, who is an involved neighbor who has worked for many, many years as with the BDS and Planning Bureau. We are here in support of the building and opposition to the demolition request. In that sense, we're in support of the Landmarks Commission recommendation and staff's recommendation, and also the National Trust for Historic Preservation weighed in today, and I think they have a letter in the record as well.
Can I just note something?
Mm-hmm.
Because the mayor asked, I thought, a great question, and the answer we got for me was counterintuitive. So the first slide you've chosen is the picture of the south side of the building that is very likely to be forever obscured when development happens. And that was actually, as I looked at the two sides of the building, I initially thought this was what we were most concerned about, because it's in my mind, just one person's view, the most appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how you mm-hmm. don't demolish history, and the backdrop is that portion of the building that is likely to be obscured forever as of right. So I just want to note that irony.
Well, notice that
you didn't choose to have this demonstration in front of the building facing the street, which is the least attractive and has been changed so much over time
right.
that arguably it has.
It's also the thinnest frontage on the street, and the photographer would be dodging cars for this. But also notice that the building face on the south exposure is set back, so it's not going to be kind of flat building wall against flat building wall if that development scenario actually comes to pass. But understand also that it was the prior owners that, when they did their complete remodel in 1979, they reoriented the front. It could be reoriented back. This city hall is a prime example of how that can be done. And there are a number of photos that will come later that show that virtually all of these elements that the applicants say deteriorate the structure to the point of non-significance, they're easily put back. They're easily restored. The cornice can be put back. The awning can put back. The front door can be rotated, like you did, from 5th to 4th, the way it was originally, from Hoyt to 18th. Those are easy things to do. Anyone who lives in Irvington has to deal with things like this. Replacing windows is an easy thing to do, certainly in everyone's view. But understand also that 3/4 of these changes, Mr. Ramos's law firm did. They can undo them. Anyone can undo them relatively cheaply. These are not structural, is my point. So this is what you have before you is a very important precedent because what you have to look at what's being proposed for demolition, what's being proposed to replace it as you balance these comprehensive plan provisions. This is easily restored. It's in structurally in very good shape. So it should not be demolished. And what's replacing it is a very large building that is maxed out with the FAR allowed in the underlying zoning, but would not be allowed with the Northwest District Plan or the community design guidelines that would require it to be at or below 4 stories. So there'd be a significant haircut on the number of units. What has been proposed nowhere near is approvable. And when I say the precedent, the only precedent, the only time you've applied this provision is the exception that proves the rule. It was the Dirty Duck Tavern that Landmarks Commission looked at it from a narrow historical perspective, but you with the broader public policy and public housing and need for homeless services decided this is a great new place for the home of the Blanchet House. There's no Blanchet House in this whole scenario. Nothing equivalent to that public benefit, nothing at all. The shared parking idea that's been suggested, 82 units with 70 below ground parking spaces. I would suggest that none of the residential neighbors, there's not much room to share residential parking with residential neighbors. So that's an illusory argument. And the housing, you've already explored. This is not low-income housing. This is market-rate housing. And the precedent that has brought out the neighborhoods throughout the city with historic districts is that if this is an approvable proposal with what's being proposed for demolition and what's being proposed to be built, if that's approvable, then no contributing structure is safe in any of your historic districts. If this is approved, then we'll go back and we'll negotiate the design. If this is approved, it's approved. A demolition permit would be approved for a contributing structure with, on that basis, what's being proposed. There are a number of issues that I would like to point out about the application, a number of false statements that were made in the application that tend to color the perception of this application. One, that they didn't receive notice of the historic district establishment. It's very hard to credit. There's a massively open public process that this law firm didn't keep track of their notice. There was very organized opposition, and they didn't participate. They indicated to the Landmarks Commission they didn't get notice. There was plenty of opportunity to oppose it then. Now that they decide to repurpose it, this is the only option. It's not. It's clearly not the only option. They can't market the property. They marketed for several years during the peak of the recession at above market rates. They were marketing for about $19 a square foot. That would be reasonable for A-class office space, but C-class office space, only $16 to $17 a square foot. So, again, kind of demolition by neglect, and also the active alteration of the structure itself. So here are the 19 elements that they indicate have been changed and therefore degrade the historic quality of the building. All of those in red, we went down to the building department records. All of those in red were pulled permits by Mr. Ramis's law firm. So it's not just neglect if they're claiming that this is what has contributed to its not being historic anymore. The interior arguments that the building ceilings are too low, that doesn't affect the historic credibility of this building. Remember, it's a contributing structure. It's not independently significant. It's not listed as an independent structure, but as a contributing structure. So the exterior is what matters. And those were large, three-quarters of them were done by the owners. They did a massive renovation when they first bought it. It hasn't been renovated for a long, long time, and that could certainly be done. The proposal ignores the two overlays that apply, the Northwest District Plan and the community design guidelines that would apply, would require consistency and compatibility with adjacent structures. This structure has surrounded by the highest concentration of individually listed historic structures, I think, in the city, 13 historic landmarks within a one-block radius of this property. So it's in the correct context. Meetings with the neighborhood, they met with the Northwest District Association Planning Committee once. They rejected the plan. The applicants said they'd come back with another one. They never did. So they have not engaged the Neighborhood Association. They've selectively engaged a few neighbors is what they've done. Scaled it back. It's maxed out at the size, massing, and scale allowed in the underlying zone. So this is the biggest possible project that could be built here. So when it comes to precedents, and that's what we're most fearful of, is that if this is approvable, it has no public benefit at all. There's no Blanchet House here. There's nothing equivalent to that in terms of public policy or historical preservation or anything. The few things that they've said are positives really are illusory arguments altogether. What's being destroyed is perfectly fixable. usable. It has been for this law firm for 30 years. And if this is, if a demolition permit can be approved for this building, then literally there is no contributing historic structure in any of your historic districts in the city that the same couldn't be said of. There, none of them are safe. Thank you.
How much do you think individual architectural merit ought to apply to that question of precedent?
I think if this were an individually